It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and worldwide at WABCBizRadio.com. This show, Mind Your Business, on the legendary 77 WABC, is all about you. Every single week, we seek out and interview C-level executives and business leaders from all types of industries and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Stay tuned for tonight's special edition. It's the Year in Review edition of Mind Your Business, where we kind of, we actually spent quite some time getting some amazing sound bites. I don't want to say it's the best sound bites of the year because there were so many great moments. We did 52 shows, 51. So therefore, there were more than we're able to play in 1 hour. But we're going to try to get to a lot of really special ones. But I want to encourage the audience. They're all available by going to WABCBizRadio.com. So, for example, Chuck Garcia is not featured specifically in this show tonight, but his interview was incredible about emotional intelligence. You can get that by going to WABCBizRadio.com, along with all the other guests that we had throughout the year and even the previous year. We're entering now our third year, actually, of being on. We were on 2015, 2016, and heading into 2017. Also, before we get into the show itself, a special shout out to the winner of the 16 for 2016. We had an amazing book giveaway. The winner was Pesach Naftali. I'm here co-hosting the show tonight is Pesach Trapper, the show's producer, as everyone's familiar with. Naftali Karp of Rhode Island. How cool is that?
Listen, you never know where the winner may come from.
Yeah, I mean, so many, a tremendous number of people participated. It was exciting. 16 books, many of them autographed. It was all promoted heavily on social media. If you follow me on social media, you certainly knew about it. Y Saftless, Y-S-A-F-T-L-A-S. And you probably entered. But again, the grand winner was Naftali Karp. We have entries all the time. We have giveaways. So, you know, just check on WABCBizRadio.com. And usually there's a splash screen that has the upcoming particular giveaway. I think now actually the one that's going into effect now is Disruptive Marketing by Jeffrey Colon. And you can enter by going to WABCBizRadio.com. Well, getting to tonight's program. It's a combination, again, as we mentioned before, of many incredible guests that we've had throughout the year. We're going to open up with a clip from Greg Williams. When I was at a C-suite conference a number of months ago, I had the opportunity to talk with Greg Williams. He's known as the master negotiator, and we talked about negotiation. So really, take it away.
Well, when it comes to reading body language, number one, you need to first establish a foundation that is normal. That's to say how a person would act in a normal environment. Mm-hmm. And then when you pose a question and all of a sudden, let's say that individual happens to be speaking at a particular pace or
right.
something of that nature.
Right.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, the individual slows the pace of speech down. You then gain insight into the verbal, nonverbal aspect of the person being reflective.
So that was a great little soundbite from Greg. Now we'll head to Peter Shankman, who's just a world-renowned social media expert, customer service. And what he's going to talk about is really important. It's simple, but it's so relative to businesses who are not understanding the economy that we're in today.
Moving to the topic of customer service, can you explain to our audience what is a customer economy?
Customer economies is what we're entering now. Essentially, last 50 years, we determined what we wanted to do, where we wanted to go, what restaurants we wanted to eat, what movies we wanted to see, based on newspapers and reviewers and occasionally friends, but primarily through what we read and what we had to search out that information. Okay, that was essentially a marketer's economy. They would provide us the information. We would go do it based on that. We have switched into a customer economy. What's a customer economy? Well, if I land in San Francisco and type in steakhouses into Google Maps, Google Maps will show me steakhouses near me, and they'll show me ads. But what they'll show me also at the top is any steakhouses that my friends have gone to first, okay, and whether or not they had a good time. Now, that makes it really interesting, because if that's automatically happening, mm-hmm. then I don't have to worry about looking for reviews. I don't have to worry about sites like Yelp or TripAdvisor. They're going to die. All I have to do is go online, and the network's going to see the kind of things I like based on what I do in the past, based on where my phone is, based on where my GPS says I am, based where I've landed. And then it's going to recommend things based on the people that I hang out with the most and what they do, right? So if I like steak and I go to steakhouses all the time mm-hmm. and you come into town and we're friends on Facebook or mm-hmm. Google or Apple, mm-hmm. the network might say, hey, you know what? You should go to this steakhouse because your friend Peter goes there a lot and he seems to love it. It's automatic. So it's less about advertising, and that's where we're moving.
Great point by Peter Shankman. Great points by Peter. And now we move to Linda Kaplan Thaler. She was the chairman of Publicis New York, and we had a chance to talk about making ideas go viral.
How do you how could you make something go viral?
Well, first of all, it's always difficult when clients say, make me a video that's going to go viral. Okay. Like, you really need to throw a lot of darts on the wall, because you don't know what's going to be picked up. And I think that's a problem we talk about in our book, Grit to Great. People are afraid to fail. Clients are afraid to fail. But if you don't get rejected and if you don't fail at things, you can never move forward. I love the story that we talk about in the book of James Dyson, who invented the bagless vacuum cleaner. Mm-hmm. You see a brilliant invention, but what I know is it took him 15 years and he had 5,126 wow. prototypes that totally sucked. Or perhaps I should say that didn't suck. So that was, they didn't work. So, and he says, I got so much more innovation with each failure that went along the way. And so we love to say to clients, you know, if it doesn't go viral, nobody will see it. So you don't have to worry. It's not going to be seen as a failure. But it's, you have to upend things in a way that are incredibly unexpected. And that is sort of the theory of creativity, is when you put two very disparate ideas together.
Then we had the chance to catch up with Mark Bodner and Annette Lucas of L&R Distributors. And they were talking about the L&R Way, a really incredible corporate culture program they have going on in their company. But we talked about the research that someone does before they approach a company.
I'd love for your listeners to hear this.
Okay.
Because it's like one of my things I love to say is, when you're making a presentation or you're being presented to and you're talking about yourself, and you're talking about, in our case, we have distribution centers and we have computer systems and we have hundreds of people all over the country.
And processes,
so
everything.
You know, you pull out that deck and you're talking about, and you're showing pictures of your warehouse and your trucks and your computer systems and your reporting and all that stuff. And you spend the first 20 minutes of the entire meeting talking about whom? Talking about yourself. Person sitting across you, 2016, here we are. And time is racing. They've been on your LinkedIn page. They've been on your Facebook page, if you have one. They've been on your website. Mm-hmm. They know everything about you. The fact that they're sitting at that same table with you means that they understand and they give you credit. Duh, in our case, duh, we're a distributor. So, of course, you're going to pack orders and you're going to pick orders and you're going to ship them. And so, really, we had this last time we met. We talked about this interested versus interesting.
Yes, and you explain?
And when we talk about being interesting, so if we can figure out when we're sitting with someone, what should we be interesting about? We want to be interesting about something they're interested in.
Yeah, so that was great, advice from Mark. Yet so simple, but so true. Now we'll jump to David Meerman Scott, who we had a chance to sit down with at a C-suite conference in Boston. David, for those who are unfamiliar, is one of the foremost leaders in the marketing world and thought leaders in that regard. Let's hear some things from David.
Now, a short while ago during your presentation, your excellent presentation, I quote, if you are using the word innovative in your marketing, you are by definition not innovative, because the word is so overused. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of words like that.
Okay.
There's cutting edge, mission critical, best of breed, all of these words. My favorite one is innovative, because I actually did an analysis of every press release sent in an entire year in the English language, and innovative was the number one most overused. Yet, it's amazing how many companies use it, and you just walk around, even over here at the show we're at, mm-hmm. or anywhere, turn on television, and like some inane product talks about how they're innovative. Our toilet paper is innovative. What are you talking about? You know, the fact that you're using that word means that you're not going to be effective in the way you communicate. That and other words that are like that. So I think that you really need to understand who are the people you're trying to reach and what words and phrases do they use. Not just make up a word that you think is going to help you, because that's probably not going to work.
At the same conference that Pesach just mentioned, we had a chance to catch up with Ron Carucci. What an incredible interview, and I encourage the listeners, listen to the entire interview with Ron Carucci. It's available by going to WABCBizRadio.com, and you just do the search. You type in, you put in the word Ron. You could. There's so many ways of finding your particular, and in fact, with Ron, we also have a preview video of approximately 15 minutes of the full-length interview, which is close to an hour. But anyways, we talked with content versus context, because he is one of the experts out there that understands. He wrote the book Rising to Power, and he understands why certain CEOs make it and certain CEOs fail. Let's give a listen.
You know, about 15 years ago, we began to see an interesting trend in CEO tenure, and it dramatically went into a free fall. And CEO tenure was reducing below 5 years. Boards were becoming activist boards and acting on CEO poor performance and taking them out far sooner than most had ever seen. And in a spate of several years, we saw 18 or 19 public company major CEOs be taken out by their boards. And we thought this couldn't be coincidence. This can't be random that so much failure is happening. Why? So we studied the failures. We studied what was behind the appointment of a CEO, whether they came from within or whether they came from outside, and what was it that caused them to stumble so violently. The interesting thing was that in the majority of cases, the CEO is what we call a context leader. A context leader is someone who leads with vision, or leads by values, leads by relationship, leads by culture. A content leader leads by strategy, by direction, by organization, by process. One is not better than the other. If you think of it as a continuum, we ideally want leaders who are blends of content and context. But the truth is, most leaders have a predisposition to one or the other. Mm. In the majority of failed cases, the context leader that was exiting was replaced by a COO or an incoming leader who was a content leader. And as that content leader stepped into the CEO role, suddenly had to create their own context, create values, create cohesion, create passion, rebuild a culture to adapt to a strategy, and they couldn't do it. And so the harder they had to grasp at the reins to try and get control of the organization, the more they suffocated it. And those leaders, you know, within 12 to 18 months as CEO, were taken out.
And as our listeners know, this every single week we make a tremendous effort to get some type of C-level executive. And that's why having someone like Ron Carucci, who has so much perspective on people in the C-suite and getting into the C-suite, it was great to have a guest like that. And again, you could pick up his entire interview by going to WABCBizRadio.com. It's free. You could listen on iTunes, click on the link, listen on your computer, watch a video on it. It's all available at WABCBizRadio.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. You're tuned to the Mind Your Business show on WABC, 77 WABC. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit websitewithbrains.com. The experienced team at Website with Brains will plan, write, design, and program a stunning and informative website that combines simplicity and flexibility. Best of all, Website with Brains can have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Get ready to look great online and take your business to the next level. See some of the attractive, user-friendly sites built by Website with Brains by visiting websitewithbrains.com. Then give Website with Brains a call at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500.
Did you know that dissatisfied employees cost American businesses over $300 billion each year? Now there's a solution. TeamAhead.co. TeamAhead is a complete solution to help companies of all sizes build a positive corporate culture. TeamAhead helps today's thought leaders make their vision a legacy. TeamAhead's comprehensive approach helps you communicate your vision and engage your employees through many channels, including print, digital, sweepstakes, video, events, social media, and a custom website. Call 800-890-1807, extension 3505 to find out how TeamAhead can transform your business's corporate culture, leading to greater productivity and revenue. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co. Team Ahead will enhance your workplace productivity, boost morale, and successfully communicate your vision. Don't let your company's strongest asset be its biggest liability. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co to fuel your winning workplace today.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. This is the Year in Review special edition. And I have the good fortune of being joined by Pesach Trapper, the executive producer of Mind Your Business. Pesach, take it away.
So next we have Sylvie DiGisto, who is a self-proclaimed people packager. And she shares a lot of great insight into how people view each other.
We see each other, we meet each other, and somehow we imprint something in our brain, a specific opinion we have about each other. And that's something you don't do that on purpose, or you don't do it not on purpose. We just do it. We are human beings. It happens every single day. We know, or science says, that it happens around 3,000 times every day. You have around 3,000 contact points in person, online, on the phone, wherever, and we judge each other every single time. And it really doesn't matter if it happens in 7 seconds or 3 seconds. Fact is, it happens. And the problem afterwards is confirmation bias will work against you because our brain wants to be right. We look for proof. We ignore everything else because we look for confirmation about our initial thought.
On the topic of people and judging people, we had a very interesting talk with Jenna Wolf, who's a fitness expert. That show was we teamed up with Zollers for, and she has some really good insight into staying in shape while running your career.
The first question that's on everyone's mind is, this show is all about getting people ahead in the business world, and how does exercise, you know, play a role over here? Or let's turn it around. How important is it for an executive, someone in business, to be in fit, you know, in good physical shape?
Well, I mean, let's just put it this way. You know, if you don't work, nothing around you works, right? It starts and it ends with you as a person. That means sleeping well. That means eating well. That means treating your body well. If you don't have the energy to get through the day, if you don't have the energy to work 13 straight hours, if you don't have the wherewithal to put good fuel in your system, you get no energy out. And that's a very sort of almost corny way of saying it, but you become so much more productive when your system is working at you know, perfect capacity. And that only happens when you take care of yourself, right? You put hours and hours and hours and years into building your career. You work at really sort of cruddy jobs, sure, when you're young to try to build this foundation. Why not do the same thing for your body? Because at the end of it, when you're sitting on that deathbed, you don't look back and regret the time you didn't spend it. You regret not having 20 years of your life back that maybe you could have done something a little different. So it goes hand in hand. If you're going to put all that work into making yourself the best you can be at work, at your career, you might as well do it with your body as well. Because if work doesn't work, your body could still work. But if your body doesn't work, work is never, your career is never going to work out.
And at some point during the year, I had a chance to catch up with Paul Massey of Cushman & Wakefield. We had a chance to talk about the real estate industry, and he also tipped off that he is running for mayor of New York City. Let's give a listen here. Now, I mean, moving forward, what perhaps you can comment on some of the short-term and long-term vision, ideas that you would like to share in terms of an approach that's needed so badly for the city.
Sure. A great example is where's the next High Line being developed? Where's the next cultural hub being created? Where's the next 7-train extension happening that's helping create Hudson Yards, which is a huge, fantastic, successful development? Where's the next Roosevelt Island tech hub being developed? What are we thinking about for transportation? I mean, think of a wild, crazy idea that if you've ever heard of what's going on in Shanghai now, which is a great and vibrant city, the whole Pudong area, which is the area that is across the river from the old part of Shanghai, is developing very, very quickly, predicated on some significant infrastructure that was created with transportation in Shanghai. So what was really desolate farm area is becoming a major area of development in Shanghai now, and it's 15 years ago it didn't exist. So look at Astoria, look at Long Island City, look at Greenpoint. You see development there. You can look across the East River and see that development happening. Why couldn't we find a way to put an accelerant on that? More places for people to live, more places for people to shop. You know, we desperately are under-retailed in the boroughs in Queens and Brooklyn. We can help with that. But a great thing about real estate development, in addition to creating homes, is that we do what I talked about before, which is creating a revenue base, increasing our ability to, you know, develop more real estate taxes, to fund more social programs, to fund the schools, to fund all the things we care about. So revenue creation, a lot of people don't focus on the fact that approximately half our city's budget comes from real estate taxes. That's something I'm keenly aware of because of the business that I'm in. So if half your revenue and half your, you know, viability come from a certain place, you ought to foster that development. And in the same way, you're making more homes for people. So it's all linked up. And if you focus on that and are creative, you can make things better for everybody.
That was Paul Massey. You'll certainly be hearing a lot about him in 2017. Next, we go to the interview we had with Matt Sweetwood, a social media expert and guru. Matt Sweetwood. There's LinkedIn, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's Instagram, there are many others, but let's focus on those four. Can you explain the role of each one individually and perhaps even give a suggestion on which industry would be the right fit for the particular platform?
Okay, so let's start with LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so LinkedIn is going to serve two purposes in my mind for a company. One, it's going to be a place where potential employees can find you.
Mm-hmm.
And employees know this. In fact, 57 or 59% of companies actually hire through LinkedIn. So employees are aware of that. So we can flip that around onto the company side. If you're not on LinkedIn, your employees are not necessarily finding you, and you want to get the best talent. So it's really a very, very vital place to actually be out there and look for people for your company. You should mm-hmm. be looking there. People should be looking for you. And there is a fee for LinkedIn if you really want to have a premium membership, but it's totally not necessary. It's preferred, but it's not necessary to pay them money as an employer or even as a person out there. The other aspect of LinkedIn, which I think is really good, is something that I suggest to business owners, is to follow customers on LinkedIn. It's a very, very simple technique that somebody in your business, either the owner of the business or you get somebody there to do, it creates a relationship with the customer. And the customer is very likely to accept that relationship because a LinkedIn connection right. is not like a personal connection. It's not like you're going out on your Facebook and trying to friend them on Facebook, even though I did that, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you know it's a very safe thing. And when you're a customer, particularly if, like I said, if you're the owner or a key executive in a company and you connect with a customer on LinkedIn, they feel special. You've created a relationship. You've created an interaction. You've given them another vehicle in which they can contact you. I found that I connected, I think, over the time I was with Unique, with a few thousand customers mm-hmm. on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And the retention rate on those customers is remarkable. It's a 99% retention rate. How do I know? If something goes wrong, they'll contact me on LinkedIn. They'll give me compliments on LinkedIn. They feel like they have a voice, and you've made them feel special individuals.
And again, we encourage the listeners to go to that entire interview, iTunes, on your computer. It is a video of that particular interview. Matt Sweetwood, credible perspective. Next, we go to James Rosebush. He wrote the book, True Reagan. He was a former senior advisor to President Ronald Reagan. Give a listen.
Your new book, True Reagan, which is available at bookstores nationwide and Amazon, Barnes & Noble. In chapter 3, you talk about how Reagan was focused. How can a leader maintain his focus? And again, leader, the leader of the the most powerful country on the planet. How did he maintain a focus? And then the obvious takeaway for listeners of the show and for anyone, had to maintain really incredible focus under any circumstance.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And it starts with knowing what you believe. If you don't, if you're like a reed blowing in the wind, mm-hmm. and you don't know exactly what your beliefs are, what your faith is, which was the bulwark of Reagan's character, was his faith. So he knew what he believed in, and if you know what you believe in, then when you see something that's fake or you see some advice that doesn't fit within that construct of your belief system, you can immediately dismiss it, or you can recognize it as some direction that you don't want to go in. So the first step is really knowing what you believe. And then I think secondly is believing that you are understanding that everyone's life is mission-oriented. So if you know that you're on a mission and that you've been God-sent, basically, to fulfill your unique role in history, and I'm talking about people even that are serving in very small ways or what seem like small ways, and that no one is ever small in that regard. But if you feel that you have a mission, you know yourself, you know what you believe in, I think it's easier, much easier to stay focused. Then I think, thirdly, you have to eliminate a lot of external interference or noise that might distract you.
Moving along, something that I'm so proud of, and I get so many compliments all the time, and I thank everyone for pointing them out to me, is the great diverse range that we've had in terms of guests on the show. And one of them was we caught up with someone at the UCS Trust Services event, attorney Avi Kestenbaum. We talked about estate planning. Let's give a listen. Is there a particular age or stage in life when someone should be thinking about putting their money in a trust such as UCS Trust Services?
So in terms of general estate planning and general trusts, I'm going to start that any individual who either has any assets whatsoever or children should automatically be doing estate planning. Wow. Everyone needs basic documents, even to say what happens to their children if they're no longer here, to their assets when they're no longer here. Everyone needs basic estate planning. Everyone also needs basic estate planning, God forbid they're not well, and there needs to be an individual who can make a decision for them, a health decision, a financial decision. So basic estate planning everybody needs. Then you have people who perhaps have accumulated a lot of assets, and they need tax planning as well, both for income taxes and estate taxes, and also to protect the assets that they have amassed. They may need help with business succession planning. They have businesses, they have real estate, how to pass it to the next generation, and how to avoid future estate disputes, both within the family and both with partners. Very, very important.
And one of the particular episodes that we had was an interview with the CEO of Dale Carnegie. How cool was that? Joe Hart.
How can a business executive lead with authenticity? Being real.
Sure. So we actually have done some research on this. I know we talked about this a little bit about, you know, what are some of the characteristics that really will motivate people to want to do their best? Mm-hmm. And what are the things that happen that really demotivate people? And ultimately, if you were to put that into, you know, one concept, the concept is authenticity. But we did a cross-cultural analysis looking at 13 different countries, and really it came down to four things that someone can do to really be, to live authentically and to really motivate and to bring out the very best in the people that they work with.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. You mentioned it was from 13 different countries. That means you would think that, you know, there are cultural differences and segment, you know, different demographics, but you're saying you found four specific measurements that was consistent
across the
across.
It's funny because we started out looking originally at the United States and Brazil.
Okay.
And we were so fascinated by what we learned that we broadened out to a whole range of other countries. And we still found consistency across these other countries, across Asia, Europe, Africa, Middle East, et cetera.
Wow.
And so really, it comes down to four different things. And we've abbreviated them as real. And the first one is R, being reliable. And so to your question about authenticity, reliability really means being internally reliable. So I am true to myself, to my beliefs. I'm not trying to be someone that I'm not. I'm not being – I mean, people can sense, and the research told us this, that people can sense when people are being disingenuous and so forth. So, but also externally reliable, meaning that I'm someone – when I say something, I do it. And because that's really – this foundation of trust is so absolutely critical, right? So if everything else that follows is not based on this reliability, this trust, it's very difficult to really
You can't connect.
You can't connect.
You sense it. You could feel it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the R is the reliable. Mm-hmm. The E is for empathetic. And really what that means, you know, and it starts with a position of almost humility or service and so forth. The idea that I don't have all the answers, and I want you, Yitzhak, are important, and I want to listen to you. It's not just about asking you to do something and telling you what we need to do. It's really, you know, what is it that you see? I mean, Ralph Waldo Emerson once said that every person I meet is my superior in some way. In that, I learn from him or her. Right.
Amazing.
I mean, so everyone I meet, everyone I come across, you know, the question is, what can I learn from that person, and how do I demonstrate, you know, really some level of caring for that person? When we think about great leaders are able to connect with people around a larger mission, and having some sense of empathy is absolutely critical about that.
So our next guest is especially apropos for year end, as UPS is delivering 30 million packages this year at the end of the year per day, 30 million per day. We have Jason Robinson, Director of Marketing at UPS.
Well, Jason, UPS has been around for 108 years. Maybe we could take a trip down memory lane, you know, how it kind of all started to where we are today. Let's just give a little perspective. I mean, today, 500,000 employees. You started 108 years ago. Wow, you're still around to talk about it. I mean,
it's an unbelievable story, really, because you get James Casey, who's the founder. Jim Casey is another way you can say it. He started in 1907. They started in the old underground Seattle area that used to be there. And he started with him and his brother started with a $100 loan from his dad to start the business and started his American Messenger Company. And there was just a bunch of guys on bikes doing courier business in and around, you know, the city of Seattle. And then slowly expanded from there, and they started getting cars and more drivers and building out and getting rights. The interesting part back then, too, was that it was all about getting rights for interstate rights, right? Going from one state to another state back then, because this was before any type of transportation industry other than the post office really existed. So there was a lot of that. So Seattle, California, working with, again, back to Macy's was kind of a big – because department stores was really kind of how we branched out of the courier side of it. And then move around and grew from there. An interesting story that I'll tell if I don't mess it up too much. But
Go for it.
One way was one of the first consumer deliveries from department stores for retail going to the consumer's home.
Okay.
That kind of started almost from back in the days with the Model T Fords and everything else. Family would go to the department store to go shopping and buy clothes, whatever.
Right.
They wouldn't be able to fit all of their products in their car to get it back home. So that was one area that we kind of stepped in and helped take those packages from that store back to that customer's house because they had no other means of getting it there because, you know, if they had a family of four sitting inside a Model T,
you didn't have a U-Haul just to hitch up to the back. Yeah.
There was no SUVs, you know.
Yeah, that was Jason Robinson, Director of Marketing at UPS. Next we go to Shep Hyken, known as the customer service amazement officer. I mean, he has some great titles. He's written a lot of great books, and we talked about the moments of magic or moments of misery. When you spoke in San Francisco and I was in the audience, you talked about moments of truth, moments of magic, or, oy vey, moments of misery. Let's take it away.
oy vey moments of misery. So that's great. So way back in the 1980s, a gentleman named Jan Carlson took over Scandinavian Airlines. It might have even been just before 1980. The airline was not doing well, losing millions of dollars, and he turned it around by gathering all of the employees together in every city they had a presence, and they went into an airplane hangar, and he gave a little speech, and he talked about how we need to manage the moments of truth in business. And he defined the moment of truth as any time that customer comes into contact with any aspect of a business, they form an impression. And his customer, of course, was a passenger at an airline. And it was primarily the people-to-people contact that he talked about. He said, you know, a passenger is going to make a reservation. They're going to check their bags at the curb. They're going to check it at the ticket counter and on and on. And he said, every one of those moments of truth can go one of two ways. It can be good and they can be bad. Now, I believe there's a third way, and that is they can be just okay. They can be average. Okay. So the bad ones I call moments of misery, as you refer to it, oy vey. And the ones that are in the middle, average, are satisfactory. I call those moments of mediocrity. And by the way, this is where most companies reside, is in mediocrity and average. They try to create a satisfied customer. But the best companies focus on something a little bit better than that, and that is to create that moment of magic. And these are fun terms, but let's make it real easy. A moment of magic isn't blow me away, over the top, above and beyond levels of service. It is simply above average service. And sometimes it's just a little bit above average. And the best companies focus on training their people to have the right skills, the right attitudes, the right, you know, they hire with the right personalities, but they basically give people they're going to perform above average. And when you have a consistent and predictable experience every time you interact with a company that's always even just the tiniest bit above average, you're in that zone of what I call amazement, because that's what amazing companies do, consistently a little better. And once in a while, there will be a problem, a confrontation, an issue that gets to be resolved. That's when you get to go above and beyond. That's when, if it's a moment of misery, you get to prove the value that, hey, we stand behind what we say.
Another great example of the value of this incredible show, Mind Your Business on 77 WABC. That incredible interview with Shep is available by going to WABCBizRadio.com. It's for free and such incredible perspective. Next, we go to Jay Baer. Jay Baer wrote the book, Hug Your Haters. What? That's exactly right. Hug Your Haters. Let's give a listen to that incredible interview. What should a company's strategy be on interacting with customers on social media?
Well, I'll tell you what the strategy is for most companies, which is to ignore them. I did a ton of research for this book. I partnered with a company called Edison Research, one of the largest research organizations in the U.S., and we did a huge study. So this isn't just my advice, right? This is math. We did a huge study and talked to thousands and thousands of Americans, and what we found is that one-third of all customer complaints are never answered now.
Wow.
Never answered at all. And almost all of those customer complaints that go unanswered are in social media and review sites, because a lot of businesses have just simply said, look, we don't have the time, we don't have the people, we don't have the expertise, we're just going to do phone and email because we know how to do that. Well, I understand that, but the challenge is your customers now, in many cases, prefer to interact with you on Facebook, Twitter, and beyond, and just because you don't like that doesn't mean that you get a free pass. So the best solution and the advice that I have in the book is that you should answer every complaint in every channel every time.
Next, we have Will Young. And for those of us who shop online, we'll definitely know this company. He's the director of product at Zappos. Let's hear what he has to say.
Let's talk about the Ask Zappos development. From my research, yep. I saw that there were 12 weeks. It was done in 12 weeks, start to finish, using one-week sprints. I thought that was a fantastic concept. I mean, my obvious question is, how can businesses learn from this idea? And do you recommend this idea as a way of really putting a start time and a finish time and optimizing productivity?
Yeah, I think it's valuable. I think for those in the startup world are going to be really familiar with sprints. It comes from a school of thought called Agile, where versus what a lot of people are familiar with, what used to be called waterfall. In the waterfall world, it was all about let's spend a couple months designing something and create beautiful screens and then spend a couple months having developers implement it, then launch it. I think the thought of sprints was, let's just, on Monday, let's set a goal for what we're going to have finished by Friday. Let's hopefully put it in front of some test users by Friday. And then next week, next Monday, let's think about what we did well next week and change what we're going to do this week. And I think where that's very valuable is, just like you said, when you get that emotional attachment to certain things, it's hard to kind of move on. But with a one-week sprint, at most, you're emotionally attached to 1 week of work. So it's not that scary to say, you know what, we tried this last week. It totally bombed in front of the 10 people we tested it with. Let's scrap it and do something different this week. I think when you plan like months in advance, it's really hard to do that.
Great perspective on time management from one of the leading companies out there on the online world, Zappos. And again, this goes back to, I must thank the audience, those the many hundreds that stop me and send me emails, pointing out the variety of different shows, different types of guests, different backgrounds representing different types of industries. Yes, that's what we pride ourselves in, and this show, Mind Your Business. Well, we're going to take a short commercial break. You're tuned to 77 WABC, the Mind Your Business show. Stay tuned.
Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So, What's the Bottom Line? As a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
Did you know that dissatisfied employees cost American businesses over $300 billion each year? Now there's a solution. TeamAhead.co. TeamAhead is a complete solution to help companies of all sizes build a positive corporate culture. TeamAhead helps today's thought leaders make their vision a legacy. TeamAhead's comprehensive approach helps you communicate your vision and engage your employees through many channels, including print, digital, sweepstakes, video, events, social media, and a custom website. Call 800-890-1807, extension 3505 to find out how TeamAhead can transform your business's corporate culture, leading to greater productivity and revenue. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co. Team Ahead will enhance your workplace productivity, boost morale, and successfully communicate your vision. Don't let your company's strongest asset be its biggest liability. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co to fuel your winning workplace today.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. You're tuned to the special edition of Mind Your Business. This is the year in review. We selected, I don't want to say the very best highlights because these certainly were great highlights, but we couldn't get, I mean, we did 51 episodes, so that means there are 51 hours of incredible content. How is it possible to just get little snippets from everyone? But we did have, a star here on the team at Bottom Line Marketing Group, and again, a special thank you to Srilly, Rina, Dina, Pesach here at Bottom Line that play an incredible role in the production of this on a weekly basis. And in case you're just tuning in now, again, this interview will be available the Tuesday after it airs. So you'll be able to get it and hear the entire thing. It'll be as in iTunes or if you want to listen on your computer or download it, as are all the episodes that we've ever had on this show, roughly 80 episodes so far, each one with incredible content. This is like a university we have going here. It's all available for free, all simply by going to WABCBizRadio.com. Again, that's WABCBizRadio.com. Well, we're going to now go to a clip from the interview that I had with Steve Rizzo. He is a motivational speaker and a internationally acclaimed comedian. It was an incredible interview. Actually, a good part of it is available also by video, and you could access it going to our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftless. Just go to YouTube, and you can access that incredible video, along with many others. The one we have with Jeffrey Hazlett, that's up there. Linda Kaplan-Thaler, that's up there as well. But anyways, let's give a listen to the one we had with Steve Rizzo. Guy's a great pitcher. He's going a couple of innings, cruising along. He gives up a two-run homer. How does he say, okay, wait, before I let this slide off the rails, I'm going to grab a hold of myself and hit the reset button?
Yep.
Is that possible?
Absolutely.
How can it be done?
Well, first, when you get up in the morning, you have to realize that you're going to be confronted with challenges.
Be prepared.
You have to say this. It's not that you want to. That's life.
You can't just say, life's going to be rosy, the whole day's going to be great. And
exactly.
I'm not going to run into any
And if you're aware of that right on the onset, if you have a goal that you want to achieve, know that, hey, you're going to go on this smooth path and everything's going to be going great, but there is a very strong chance that you're going to hit, some people are going to hit major obstacles. Now, that's your challenge. That's your challenge. You know you have it. So what you need to do, rather than, some people call it negative self-talk, I call it self-curse talk, because that's what it is. You're casting a spell on your life. And these people start saying things like, I knew this was going to happen. Every time I try to set out to achieve something, this happens all the time. Everybody else has what I want. Why does this have to happen to me now? When you start doing that, you're opening up the door to the negative zone. And then you get so caught up in that you walk into the door, the door's closed, and now you're stuck. Now you're making a challenging situation worse than what it has to be. Second thing you have to do is to say that no matter what challenge that life throws me, there is something within me that can meet it head on, a higher part of myself, whatever it may be. And I know if I leave this in the hands of this higher part of myself or this strong part of myself, I will find a solution to this. And that's how you do it. The more you focus on your lack and what isn't working, the more your life won't work and the more lack you're going to get.
Great perspective by Steve Rizzo. And as I mentioned, I get stopped frequently by all different people. In fact, I remember a comment I had from Mark Bodner, CEO of L&R Distributors. He said, hey, you know, that guy Steve was very good. I said, sure was. He probably listened to the whole thing. I know he listens, on the podcast. But, you know, I want to just list some of the great guests that we weren't able to, they just, not that they didn't make the cut. They had such great perspective, but in this short time frame that we had for tonight's show, we didn't have any clips from them. Dan Sullivan, president and founder of Strategic Coach. What about the interview I had with Eric Enquist, assistant managing editor at Crain's New York Business? What about the Diane Durestra, author of Knockout Presentations? Mitch Axelrod, Sergey Petrosov, founder and CEO of JetSmarter. Tom White, co-founder and CEO of the C-Suite Network. Joe Loda, former chairman of the MTA. And Todd Buchholz, former director of White House Economic Policy. Jack Canfield, right, America's number one success coach. And so many others. They're all available by going to wabcbizradio.com. WABCBizRadio.com. There you go. Next, I want to go to a clip from an incredible show that we had right after Election Day, right? This is a major upset victory for President-elect Donald Trump. So I had on two renowned political consultants, Kalman Yeager and Michael Fragan. And let's give a listen. Was there a media bias against Donald Trump?
I'll take this first, okay. Michael. I mean, you know, I believe there was a media bias in the broad sense, but I think it's a vicious cycle when it comes to a media bias, because I think that it worked in a very circular fashion. The media bias was a response by the media to the way Trump was treating the media, which turned into a bias against Trump, which exasperated the reaction, which turned the bias even stronger, to the point where
it spiraled.
And so a lot of what, you know, when Trump would say something that was demonstrably untrue, and I think everybody at this table, including a Republican, can admit that a lot of what Trump was saying was demonstrably not true. And then the media would debate amongst themselves, well, are we allowed to call him a liar? You know, we're reporters. We're supposed to be independent. But if we know something's not true, can we call them a liar? So then they run, you know, let's pick the New York Times. They run a front, top of the fold, front page story that goes into and takes a full broadsheet on Donald Trump not being truthful about pick your issue. And then Trump says, well, that's a completely unfair story. You are crooked media. You're liars. Well, okay, well, what do you think the reporters are going to do then? Well, you can, the liar calling me a liar, we're going to call you back a liar. So the absolutely was a bias, but it was circular. It was institutional. It was across the board. I don't necessarily believe it was an unfair bias, though. I believe there was a bias that you just see. On the other hand, there, you know, when we talk about the media, it's not just the New York Times, you know, and you know, NBC, but right. The media includes the Breitbarts. The media includes the Huffington Post, which is biased in a different direction.
Right. News
the
Max,
media
Fox.
Is a lot, and right. Certainly Fox, okay. Certainly CNN, certainly MSNBC. So you have a lot of media that's not your standard New York Times reporter with credentials around their neck, but even and even beyond the cable TV news media, you have a lot of the web-based media, right. You know, the Breitbarts, which is clearly a biased media. You have Drudge Report. That's media. That's a very biased media. So there's a lot of media that was biased in favor of Trump. Does it balance out? Yeah, I'm not a mathematician when it comes to these things, but gotcha. I do believe that the bias was in both directions, and certainly it doesn't appear that it hurt Trump at the end.
Oh, I'm going to get to that, but first, Michael, do you want to touch
on that? I'll make 3 points on that. I'll try and make them very succinctly so we can get to the next point here, is that I think the media was biased towards Trump during the primary. He got far and away more coverage than any nominee of any party could have gotten in any contest. Okay. He dominated the airwaves over and over. Partly that's because he's very good at
right.
the media. He's very good at getting covered. But he did that. And some of the network executives admitted and they conceded about the fact that they covered him because of ratings and because he was good coverage. Right. Number two is that Trump in the general election really had not been oppo-researched. The other Republican candidates inexplicably, and I can't figure this out, they just – one of the first things I do as a political professional is Kama does also. You're running in a race. You do two types of oppo research. You do it on your own candidate, and then you do it on the other guy or the other people that you're running against. Nobody did it on Trump. All the stories that came out during the general election probably should have come out during the primary. It's inexplicable that didn't happen, and the media didn't do any of that. They didn't do any of those stories. They didn't do on the taxes. They didn't do anything. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you could, the Cuba thing. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could have gone out. And as Colin said, none of it mattered.
And as we approach inauguration day in a couple of weeks, there's still so many stories about this incredible race. I mean, from when President-elect Donald Trump announced in mid-2015 till his incredible upset victory in November is just one great story in terms of how something like that could be pulled off. And that was great perspective by Kalman Yeager and Michael Fragan. Well, the final clip that we're going to air on this special edition was from Richard Beeler. He's a noted fundraising consultant, has a tremendous amount of experience in the fundraising world. He worked for Yeshiva University, OHEL Children's Home and Family Services, and he talked about some great tips for anyone in the nonprofit world. What role does marketing play in advancing the cause of giving to nonprofits?
I think it's a great question, and I think it does apply to some of your small business owners who may be listening tonight also. Differentiation is the key. One never says that one is, or another cause, or someone else in the same place or same business is not a good place. You're just saying that you do something differently, and you may do it better, and you may do it more effectively and more efficiently in the case of charity. What marketing can do, if applied properly, number one, it keeps you in the public's eye and ear. And especially today, when we see that there's such a barrage of information that's coming forward, and it's easy to get lost, that a strategic marketing plan is important also for the board, because the board then has to think about why they're doing this work. And if it is 10 or 15 or 20 years after the organization was founded, chances are that conversation hasn't taken place. Wow. So as much as the marketing, the branding is important, because branding also should change as the different individuals change. I think if we remember certain stores that never changed when they how they went in. And I remember if I was a kid, I'd go into a certain supermarket and it looked the same 30 years later. That supermarket's not there anymore, right? Because the model changed, the model, and the model of charity changes as well. So working with a professional group, and also having that group interact with your consumers and have it with your consumers and your donors, and even having them speak to the individuals who are your professionals, clinical professionals in the case of an organization. Don't leave the teachers out of the process. Don't leave the doctors out of the process. Don't leave the social workers out of the process. Involving the whole group, which a marketing plan really can do, and create excitement and, in a sense, that kind of renewal that we're here and we're doing this.
As we approach the close of this incredible Year in Review edition, again, I want to thank the executive producer, Pesach Tropper, week in and week out, comes up with these incredible guests. Special thank you to him. Also, special thank you to the great team at 77 WABC, Jose, Matt, Chris, Brian, Justin. Special thank you. And to all our incredible guests that give of their time and share of their wisdom and expertise on these great airwaves here on the Mind Your Business show on 77 WABC. So as we approach the close, I want to remind everyone to stay tuned up next for John Batchelor, and tune in again next Sunday evening in 2017, as we'll have more incredible guests, as we do every single week, right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night from 11 until midnight on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.